Okay. Still here. I'm getting weird things coming up, but okay, I guess it's still working. So just want to share a few thoughts that came up. And I was reading one of the books by Dingo Kensi, one of his talks, called Enlightened Courage, which is, I think all the books of his are really, he's just giving commentary on a particular very famous Tibetan text, the 37 practices of the Bodhisattva. But what I'm going to talk about really has nothing to do with the text whatsoever, except that in this particular chapter, I like the heading and what it said, the name of the chapter, an explanation of the practice as a way of life. That sounds good, huh? And then he goes on and talks about what he called the five strengths. The five strengths, in the way he was talking, to support the aspiration of cultivating bodhisattva qualities. But here I'm just going to talk the five strengths that support practice as a way of life, not in or out of retreat, not making a difference, but what really supports us in our hearts, in our minds. So I just like this list of five strengths, and I'm just going to riff a little bit on each of them. This will either be very short, or each one of these could be a whole talk. I won't do that to you, but I want to at least get through the five, because I think they each have something. Think about this, just different things that support, and you're all long-term practitioners. So hopefully all of these are completely familiar to you, but just putting it into mind, I think I mentioned at the beginning that coming home from being on a 6-week self-retreat, it just struck me, as always, it seems like it's clearer every time, but same thing, just how when we're being on retreat and there's less things coming in, the power of the connection to Dhamma and knowing that's how we live and what's beautiful and what's most important, it's just not questioned, you know? It takes over. And just to watch, not that that goes away, but the immediacy of it, the power of it in a way that it informs decisions and choices, gets a bit weaker as all the other things we need to do and have to do and our responsibilities come in. It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that because I have responsibilities, the connection to the power of the Dhamma gets less. But this is to be kind of like the koan of our lives. So the five strengths. The first is strengths or power. He called them power. The power of resolution. Resolution in, now I'm going into our Theravada way. I'm not referencing Dingo Kensi anymore. Resolution is a translation for a word in Pali, adhitana, resolution, determination, and it's one of the paramis, one of, in Theravada, the 10 really wholesome qualities of citta, of heart and mind that we develop as we're, that help us to strengthen wisdom and compassion and that strengthen our practice. So just to say adhitana, resolution, is, it's this sense of real, just what we think, I resolve, it could be anything, to sit every day, you make a determination, but remember, it's a wholesome quality. It is a real strength that's described as in the commentaries, it's kind of like a stone pillar, you know, you're just there, it's not wavering. But we can, or it's easy to think of resolution and make a resolution, I'm going to sit every day, but it's not necessarily from wisdom. It could be from not feeling good about yourself, from trying to achieve something. It could be from self-denigration, or when you don't do it, it leads to self-hatred or sense of failure or striving. You know, I am resolved to awaken completely in this lifetime. That could be a beautiful aspiration, or that could be a total striving, self-referencing thing that drives you crazy, right? That makes you judge everything you do. One is wholesome and one's not. Guess which one, right? You can tell the difference. But the wholesomeness of resolution is something we can really start to explore and embrace. So just to give a few little examples, Aditata, very simple. Well, one is we used to use, you know, the Nike logo of just do it. That's how I feel about resolution in a little way. Like, I'll go back to getting up in the morning since I've already shared what a wonderful time of day that usually is for me. And it used to be lie there, should I get up? But now it's like lying there, just do it. You just get up. It's not a big whoop. There's not a version. There's not, I'm so great. It's just a set of lying there thinking about me and what and if and I'm so, just get up. It's really simple and straightforward, and it just cuts through all the malarkey. It saves a lot of energy. But, you know, so it's something to explore. You can't just call on it, but it really helps us. So I want to give just three examples from different teachers. One, I mean, this is so obvious, but with Utejaniya, so many times at the end of a retreat, people will say, well, how can I continue to, you know, trust and develop awareness as I go through life? What are you, and we all want the magic tips, right? We want that for everything. And the first time I heard him say that, it was like, duh, of course. He said, the first thing, the most important thing is, it has to matter to you. You have to realize in your own experience that when there's awareness, it really makes a difference to when there's unawareness. That you really know that, it's really clear to you. And then I'm saying this is like in terms of resolution. Resolution doesn't mean you never forget it. A resolution is just this, yeah, cultivating awareness is really important to me. And we might, you know, revisit that every day, not should, just do it. And then maybe you forget it for 12 hours and suddenly you're in the middle of something and it comes, oh, just be aware, just do it. Over time, that sense of resolution strengthens. It's a lovely support. Someone asked, well, I don't remember if it was in a group or in all of us, about getting, you know, thoughts really persistent, ongoing thoughts that go and then you want, you can see the wanting or whatever, but they were saying, isn't there also a place where you just say, no, not now? And there is a place from wisdom, not from aversion, not from fear, not from thinking I should, these are stupid, but from when there's a place of wisdom, that there's that thought again and again, and there's the wanting and wisdom, says, no, not now. That's like a moment of aditana. It's based in wisdom, and it's based in the wisdom of no kalesa. It's also based in the wisdom of what's possible. So for the big example, in the Buddha sat down under the Bodhi tree and made that resolution, I will not get up, you know, until I'm completely awakened. Well, I always think, who knows what was going on, but somehow there was the wisdom to know when he could make that resolution and it would really work. He didn't make that resolution like 3 years previously or when something else was going on, you know? So it doesn't like making a resolution for some amazing thing I'm gonna do that's actually physically impossible. No, be reasonable. But it's this quality of mind, this steadfastness, this clarity. Yeah, awareness is important to me. But look and see if it's not really, it's just an idea that it should be, that's very different. So we have to be honest with ourselves. The second, Ajahn Sumedho. Again, you know, bringing up all these people, they talk, use different language, which to me all sounds like the same way of practice, really, it's what we're doing. I think Ajahn Sumedho, I think this was when he was talking to teachers or maybe it was a talk, I don't know where it was. But he was talking about, of course, he has confidence in intuitive awareness, just what we've been talking about, really trust, to relax into the awareness rather than buying into the meaning and the stories. The object's there, it's arising, but the confidence is with the awareness to allow it to be. So he talks about that all the time. And in this example, he was talking, he said, there's a period, and probably a lot of them, at Amaravati when things were really, really hard and he was getting as the head and also he's the one kind of calling the shots, a lot of criticism and blame and anger. And it was just a really hard time. And some of the senior monks he'd been with for years were disrobing and leaving. And yeah, you know, it was really hard. He goes, and my personality really didn't like it. You know, I don't like being blamed. I don't like being having everyone angry at me. I don't like feeling like maybe I'm not doing the right thing, you know. And it was so intense and so much going on, he couldn't just kind of retreat and look, oh, let me look at anger, let me look at dislike, you know. It's all the interactions are happening. And he said, I had to make a really, really clear, strong to myself, where I made a strong determination to have confidence in awareness. If you get a sense, to me, that really touched me, because he was talking, this wasn't that long ago, after 30, 40 years of practice, and he totally trusted confidence in awareness. But when things get really tough and the personality comes up really strong and stuff's coming at you, so I had to make a really clear determination. Have confidence in awareness, not have confidence in my personality. A little bit what I was talking about the other night. I don't know if you get a sense of that, but somehow to me, it was a really powerful statement. That sense of not just, oh, I just trust awareness will, you know, take over. My determination to recognize awareness, to have confidence in it. The third example of resolution in this way, from Mingyur Rinpoche. I love this. I'm using all my little notes from years. I thought I could throw them all in at once. So talking about setting the intention for awareness. And one of you said something about this earlier, but he said, once you set your intention just to remember awareness, the mind, the chitta will go in that direction. The target is not the object, awareness is the object. So when you say the mind goes in that direction, it goes in the direction of awareness. You use whatever object is arising as a tool to access the mind of awareness. Once you set your intention, this is the determination part. And once you use all your supports to collect the mind, you set your intention and then allow for a shift from object to awareness. You set your intention, make a determination, and allow for a shift. You notice he didn't say, you do the shift. That would lead us into striving, and that's not the resolution, the determination. So those are just three different ways of talking about it. Oh, he goes on, Mingyur. Once we start on our path of Dharma, every practice is an awareness practice. As we go along, every activity is an awareness practice, or at least an opportunity to practice awareness. That's to me kind of the determination, the aditana I can make. Not that I'm going to do it all the time. It's not a forceful willpower. It's just a resolution. Yeah, I need every activity as a chance to practice awareness. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, but I think you get the sense. I hope you get the sense what I mean. The second power, the power of familiarization, the power of becoming familiar. And this I like because it's so practical. You know, you're starting out saying every time when we begin a meditation or begin a new practice, it's difficult in the beginning. And not only the beginning, but it's really difficult in the beginning. And all of you here have somehow acknowledged that as we persevere, as we become more familiar with the practice, with awareness, with how the mind works, it gets easier. The stuff coming up doesn't necessarily get any better, but the ability and the trust in the practice gets easier. Yeah? Can any of you relate to that? Yes, no, yes. No. So that's the sense, the most obvious sense of familiarization. The other one, just briefly to bring up that I wanted to bring up is recognizing the wholesome, becoming familiar. We're becoming familiar with how the torments work, greed, hatred, confusion, and that's important. That is important. We're really familiar with them already. We're just not familiar with the awareness of how they work. But the wholesome familiarization I want to point to, Andrea mentioned it in a certain way well, I don't know if it was this morning or yesterday afternoon, doesn't matter. When she talks about the place of ease, the moment of the citta, the heart mind, when some clinging has released. The place of ease is really a moment when in the citta, the heart mind, there's no kalesa. It's what Ajahn Buddhadasa calls the coolness of the mind and heart in a moment that's free from wanting, free from aversion, free from meing. And we all have many moments of this, this place of ease through the day. We really do. Sometimes they're noticeable, as Andre was talking about, when something's been really tight and it lets go, and then it's obvious, the ease, ah. As some of you have referenced it, just when the sense of self kind of release, ah, the same thing's happening, but not the Velcro. Well, as Andre was saying, get familiar with that place of ease. And I want to second that. That really, you know, we give equal time to the klesa, but also awareness of the moments of what I would call pure heart mind. When the klesas, the torments are not arising, are not operating. Now, awareness might notice wanting, but when it's that place of ease, you feel that sense of ease, calm, even though what's arising may not be easeful. And I think, really, we all experience little moments of that more frequently than we recognize, little moments that aren't always coming after a big release, when it's obvious, when the of Kalesa. He said, because if we didn't all have many moments of this coolness, we'd all go insane. Burning from the fires of Kalesa, it's just too much 24/7. I mean, it might feel like we're burning like that 24/7 sometimes, right? Notice these little moments. Really allow your conscious perception arising in the awareness to just receive. Don't make a big thing about it. And yeah, the next moment might be me, experiencing a place of ease, but that's just the next arising moment. Don't take that personally either. But to really allow for this conscious familiarization with the place of ease, it's this coolness. It's not a big thing. It's the coolness, it's the absence of fire, it's no big fireworks going off. It's no necessarily big insight or anything, you know? It's sort of our tendency of looking so much for the intensity where we overlook, just like we've overlooked awareness. It's always available and so simple and obvious, we're looking to objects. This is the same thing. Place of ease, moment of ease. It's not really a place, a moment of citta. And along the same lines, as we've mentioned repeatedly, letting into perception, conscious awareness, whenever awareness recognizes a wholesome quality arising in the heart mind, there's a moment of generosity, moment of metta, a moment of calmness, a moment of compassion, all kinds of wholesome qualities. And it may just be there a few moments come and go, just recognizing it, noticing it, getting familiar with it, so that we don't get to the place when it's calm, we go, calm? Where did that come from? That can't be me. Or someone's doing something annoying and somehow compassion arising. A compassion, well, how could that come? That can't be me, that's weird. And we start like dissing it right away or not trusting it. Just feel it. Just get, you know, really feeling how these wholesome qualities feel. We get familiar. And as we said, the wisdom, panya in the heart mind, wisdom recognizing accurately, seeing clearly, wisdom makes choices that feed the wholesome. So you might notice, you know, you suddenly you feel like you're choosing to do something that you didn't think you wanted to do, but you realize it's a wholesome thing. And suddenly the mind and body's doing it, even though you thought you were going to walk over and do something else. Have you ever had moments like that? And not like you're going to do a bad thing, but I think, okay, let me just sit down and watch this veg out TV show. And I walk into the room and then somehow I turn around and I'm doing walk-in meditation. To venturing out on the TV show. It's like the Dhamma made the choice, the wisdom made the choice. It doesn't always. Sometimes the veg out mind makes the choice. But notice more and more when wisdom and wholesome is there. It's not me, it's not personal, but let it in. This is really important, really important. Oh, good. Okay. The third, the way Dingyo Kensi Rinpoche phrased it, the power of positive seeds, or as he called it, making merit. I'm going to say it's following on recognizing wholesome, but really also recognizing, well, this is my understanding that the so frequently the way the Buddha describes in the Pali texts, the real freedom, the cessation of suffering, the peace and ease he's offering is available because the heart mind is free from greed, hatred, and confusion, right? And so allowing the steady awareness and wisdom to see how those do their job allows the wisdom to see, well, they're not doing such a great job. It's not really the job we want done here. Let's do something else. That's one way. But also, then what we start to do and what wisdom starts to do is feed intentions that lead to wholesome actions of mind, speech, and body. And as we've been, you know, pounding on through this retreat, steady receptive awareness is maybe the most accessible. Seems so familiar. We've gotten too familiar with that. We're so used to it that unthinkingly we follow it. But we can also cultivate the wholesome habits, and awareness is one great way, but how do we bring it into all aspects of our life? And this is could really be like three talks, is there's all kinds of ways to cultivate wholesomeness in body, speech, and mind. As you know, the Buddha always, when he was teaching to lay people, he'd start with generosity, and he'd move to sila, to non-harming behavior. You know, he'd move to an understanding, cause and effect, and into wisdom. But that's something that's so supportive to us, to cultivate wholesome. So, you know, there's times you think, well, you know, 3 weeks from now, you think awareness. What was that awareness? I'm just like caught up in all this stuff. Oh, am I aware? Am I not? Am I making it up? I don't know. We can cultivate generosity. The intention of generosity and a moment of the intention of offering anything, just a smile, but a real genuine open-hearted offering. That's a moment of non-clinging. That's a moment of non-selfing when it's really the intention of generosity. It's powerful. It's strengthening the wholesome and starving the unwholesome. And it's a source of happiness here and now, you know. So I could give a whole talk about generosity. I'm not going to, but just to not think that's some lesser thing, just any little act of generosity. There's one sutta where the Buddha's talking about, and he said, you know, back in his days, even if you're rinsing, you know, after the nuns and monks would, and still now, still like that now, eat their food in their alms bowl, and then they rinse out their alms bowl, you know, and throw it into the river, unfortunately, the river or the well or whatever. I mean, not to clean the water sometimes over there. But anyway, you see, it's as if when you're throwing the rinsings of your bowl into a pool and you think, may whatever beings are living in this pool, whatever beings may be here, may they be able to benefit to eat from the rinsings of this bowl. That's an act of generosity. It's beautiful. What does it take to do that except remembering? And it feels so much nicer than just chucking the water into the pond. how often do I remember? Well, not that I'm rinsing my bowl, but you know, it's so easy not to, because we're maybe not in the habit. So cultivating generosity consciously really strengthens the habit of the wholesome, and it's happiness producing. In whatever way, it really doesn't matter what way you cultivate the generosity. It's not about how much or anything. It's the movement in the citta, in the mind, heart, you know. Similarly with non-harming behavior, which of course we talk about in the beginning, and I'm sure you're all on board with, but again, bringing it into conscious awareness so that it's not just it's great if it's a habit of non-harming behavior, don't get me wrong, but being aware, as I think I said the first night, if we start to even do some little, say something that isn't helpful or that's harsh, or take a little thing that you know the person wouldn't care if you took it, you know that, but still you don't have permission, and you start to take it and you feel a little funny inside. It's not about so often it's like, I know they wouldn't care, but I feel a little funny. You get more tuned in to the unwholesomeness. And right away, instead of the thinking, rational mind, well, I know they don't care, and so I feel funny, so what? Go do it. But you know, the last few years you're saying, no, put it back. And do it not with self-hatred. Do it with, you know, love of non-harming. Appreciating that wholesome action. Familiarizing yourself with how the wholesome feels, rather than going into the negative of self-judgment. Oh, I thought about taking it. Little actions like that, bring it into consciousness and really appreciate. It's gotten so like little moments of sila can also bring a real happiness. You just kind of feel that purity, you know? Or when something is in front of you to take or do or say or whatever, and you see how it would be easy, but the thought to do it doesn't even arise. That sense of the absence of unwholesome, that's lovely. That's a beautiful moment of heart and mind. Notice it, you know? Like that habit of the wanting to hurt or the wanting what you want or whatever, not arising in that moment. The wholesomeness naturally arising. Go back to the second, familiarize yourself with that feeling. Don't think it's some fluke. It's really the wholesome qualities, the habits of that getting stronger. And so it'll happen naturally, of course, with awareness, but also at times we can strengthen. We can consciously do this. And this is, it's all part of our practice of awakening. It's not like lesser or something. Really important. There's a sutta I remember, the Buddha gives six ways he's talking to householders. A householder comes to him and says, you know, how are we householders living in the world surrounded by our family and all these things we have to do? These teachings you're giving, they're for the renunciate ones, you know, what are we supposed to do? So first I want to say, it's really clear in all the suttas that lay people are completely capable of awakening. So it's not so that you have to be a renunciate to awaken. That's clear in the suttas. But he was answering this person's question who was saying it can't do it. So he gave six things. I'm only going to give these two because they fit in to what I'm talking about. And they're both the same. I'm just remembering it, so it might be a paraphrase. So he said, reflect on when you are feeling all caught up with something, when your mind is basically involved in kalesa, you can sit down and reflect on your previous habits of your previous actions of generosity. And then I'm going to merge them together. You can also reflect on your previous actions of sila, of non-harming, of conscious conduct. And again, that's something I was never brought up to do, to sit and reflect on, to bring into my heart mind the generous things I've said or done, or the conscious conduct things I've said or done. Because again, at least in my habit pattern, it moves into, but that isn't that kind of egotistical. I'm so generous. But that's not wholesome. That's not what he's saying. When you actually, and don't, you know, maybe not do it now, but try it. Just sit and not think I'm so generous. That's reflecting on me. You're not thinking of that. You're just allowing the visceral memory of generous things you've said or done to arise, or non-harming things you've said or done to arise, and just remembering it and see what happens. And you know, you maybe, hopefully you all know this already, it brings a real happiness, a lightness, a brightness to the mind, the heart. So the Buddha goes on in this, he's telling people to do that. And he says, because when your mind is reflecting on generosity, or when your mind is reflecting on sila, it is not caught up in, it's not caught up in obsessive craving. It's not caught up in aversion. It's not caught up in confusion, delusion. When the mind is connected to reflecting on generosity, on sila, then the mind, the heart is headed straight. Then the mind, the heart is in alignment with the Dhamma and some other things I can't remember, but that basically. So that's a really available thing that I was never taught to sit down and think about my generous actions. And when the mind goes negative on it, don't pay attention to that. Oh yeah, I did nothing generous. That was just a little, that's garbage. That's just, you know, negative habit. Reflect on it. And he ended it by saying, this householder, you can do this reflection when you're standing, when you're sitting, when you're walking, when you're working, when you're sitting in your home crowded with children. In other words, you can do it anytime. It's a way to cut through the confusion, the kalesa, and brighten and strengthen that habit in the citta, in the mind heart. I love that. I love that. It's so available, but it's so not the habit of my mind. And then I just, in terms of this power of positive seeds, I want to read one more thing from Mingyur. It could have gone at the end, but it's going now. He's talking again about intention, right? And in a way, this intention of generosity, just some little act of generosity, it's all about the intention. What's the quality in the heart mind? So Mingyur Rinpoche is talking about intention. And this is another way to consciously call in wholesome, beautiful intention before action. And again, it's so simple. And I forget to do it so much. And it's like night and day when I do it. So he said, the intention can transform neutral activities into positive ones. An example is that story I gave from the Buddha. You're just putting your washing water in the pool, but you add the intention of generosity. It transforms it from a neutral action into a really wholesome, generous action. You get a sense of that? It's like just every time one sits down to eat, just have the intention, you know, may whatever it may be, but may I eat this food to be of benefit to all beings, or may all beings have good food. This is the example Mingyur gives. I really like it. You'll see why. Intention can transform neutral activities into positive ones. Take sleeping as an example. You see why I like it. When we go to bed at night with the mind of bodhicitta, so for him, bodhicitta is that aspiration to awaken in order to help other beings awaken. That's a very beautiful intention. It doesn't even have to be that one. But go to bed at night and say, oh God, I hope I can sleep, you know, I hope I don't have bed. Just may my sleep, you know, support my awakening mind so I can be of service to my family tomorrow, anything. When we go to bed at night with that mind of bodhicitta, we aspire that our sleep be the cause of increased capacity to help all beings attain enlightenment. Isn't that nice? I mean, it's so nice and it's so simple. And I forget it so much because of habit, just because of habit. So every moment can offer an opportunity to turn away from samsara, to turn away from just these old habits and towards the awakening mind, the awakening heart. So if it's useful, take it as a way to explore, not as something you should do or you're bad, right? Don't turn it into that. But these are all just little clues to help us bring all aspects of our life into our commitment to awakening. And all of them so far actually bring happiness and lightness to the heart mind. None of this is stressful or difficult. Just like awareness, it's only remembering that's difficult. And then the aversion we get, which is the old habit, that's stressful. So that's another way of working with cultivating the wholesome power of positive seeds. The fourth, disenchantment, the power of disenchantment. This I really wanted to give a whole talk on, but I didn't get around to it. I'm going to really have to contain myself. Disenchantment, the word that's often you might see translated in a lot of the suttas as disgust or revulsion. And really, I think in terms of our psychology, not so helpful. I can't hear those without aversion, and it doesn't really meet the point. Disenchantment. Let me read you how Ajahn Pasano defines it. The word in Pali, nibbida, disenchantment. Another way is weariness with samsara. I like that too. Ajahn Pasano. Nibbita, an inner quality of heart-mind that loosens the hold of our habitual patterns of perception and conception. Losing one's taste for, not delighting in the flavor. And bottom line, disenchantment from losing one's taste for what? The obsession, the obsessive interest in me, in me-centric thing. So it's like the example that's given, it's not throwing away or hating, it's really, it's a really peaceful aspect of heart, losing one's taste for. The example that's always given is that of a dog that's really hungry that finds an old 10-year-old bone somewhere, and the dog's gnawing away at the bone, but that bone is bleached dry for years. There's nothing on that bone, in that bone, there's nothing of nutriment for the dog. And after a little while, the dog just puts it down and goes away because there's no nourishment there, right? That's nibbida. It's not revulsion. It's not disgust. It's just, oh, put it down. There's nothing here. This is a quality that I think often people in the beginning of practice go, but if I lose my taste for things of life, you know, it's just, what's it going to be like? Oh, you know, all that projecting into the future. But you all know there's times when you caught up in something, or maybe you had a habit in your life that you always had to do. And now it just dropped away because it's not interesting. You know, maybe other aspects of Dhamma are more interesting. You don't even feel a sense of loss. It's a sense of openness, a sense of more awake in a way. You get a sense, this is really a lovely quality. And so one way, you know, it develops just through steady awareness, of course. We start to, it's not just the losing the obsession with me, but the it's losing the enchantment with desiring, with wanting itself. I don't know if you've known, just exploring, it's as if somehow wanting itself, the movement of wanting, of desire, has a kind of a gratification in it. I don't know, have you ever noticed that? Maybe it's just me. Although in the Second Noble Truth, when the Buddha described, you know, the cause of suffering is tanha, that thirst, arising together with delight, now here, now there. And so, you know, we get sucked into wanting as bringing us to some kind of delight. And of course, you know, that's a whole, we could talk about that forever. But the nibbida, we start to, the enchantment with wanting starts to fade, the gratification of it. I'll say one thing I noticed in noticing wanting, the gratification of wanting. Every time, not some big wanting that's suffering, that's obviously suffering, and it's suffering because you can't get what you want. That's when you know it's suffering. But going through these days, these days of quarantine here, where you know you're home all day, and you have stuff to do sometimes, but other times not. And there's plenty, most of the time, I'm really fine with that. I'm not a big doer. But every once in a while, there's like a little it's not boredom, but the kind of mind's kind of looking around, not really yet one. And then it thinks of something to want, whatever it is. It's like, it perks up. The mind perks up. Oh, a project, something to do, in the sense of me kind of gets, you know, a little more alive, and the energy gets a little more alive. And without recognizing it, that sense of wanting itself has a gratification, because I didn't even do the thing yet. It just perked up. It might just be, oh, I could go vacuum out the car. It could be anything. It's just that sense of, oh, something for me to do, a gratification of me. It's kind of fun to watch. So in this sense of nibbida, this what gets kind of just put down is that gratification, that self-gratification with wanting. And because awareness is just seeing the whole process so clearly. So what I just described, seeing it, it's kind of a kick. An awareness seeing, oh yeah, great, me, Carol, I could go vacuum the car, you know. I could vacuum the car or not vacuum the car, but that gratification of wanting kind of doesn't have much feet to it, you know. It drops out. So one way this nibbita, this sense of, it's really the peace of non-clinging, rather than thinking of it as some, you know, gray nothingness, you know, there's two things, two quotations I always use. I try to get them correct. Oh yeah. Not only see the drawbacks of samsara, but recognizing when the gratification of clinging it, the enchantment with that is gone. You see, this is what the Buddha said. What is beautiful in the world remains so, but the wise one no longer strives after it. That's the difference. It's not that we put down clinging and everything beautiful goes away. That's our attachment to wanting, to desire, and me and the self-gratification. What is beautiful in the world remains so, but there's no need to strive after it. It's a beautiful thing. And one other, just point, these are just pointers. So the disenchantment arises, it's a state of mind, comes and goes, of course, through seeing the defects of samsara, the suffering of the kalesa, the drawbacks, but also by familiarizing and turning the awareness and really recognizing the wholesome qualities. Back to what we were saying before, the recognizing the peace of the cool heart mind. And so a lot of our teaching, a lot of the teachings in the suttas is really about understanding how the kalesas work so that we drop the attachment. But there's also this one quotation from The Island. Do you know that book, The Island, that's put together by Ajahn Pasano and Ajahn Amaro? It's a wonderful book if you're interested at all in the Pali suttas. It's all about the island of Nibbana and all about different ways the Buddha talks about the awakening and the four aspects of awakening. Anyway, pull a lot of suttas out and then their own commentary. That's really a great book if you're interested in that. But they point out one sutta where it's not only just about cultivating a disenchantment with the drawbacks of samsara, it's also that we recognize the beauty, I want to say, or the ease, the peace, the wonderfulness of sublime, that is the stilling of activities, the stilling of all these sankharas, mental formations, doings, the relinquishment of all acquiring, the ending of craving, dispassion, nibbana. So just once in a while, turn the mind to, this is peaceful, this is sublime. Rather than, I got to get rid of this clinging so I can, this is peaceful, the absence of craving. Nothing special is going on. This is sublime. Not to hold to, but to bring more and more and more of this awareness into our heart and mind. We're not going to get that, you know, from the news or the TV or many places on the internet unless you look for it. But it's here. It's available. to all of us. Many moments, those little moments of nothing special happening, instead of waiting for the next thing to learn something from. Ah, this is peaceful. This is sublime. And now it's gone and something else is happening. But really incorporating this nibbida, this disenchantment, it's beautiful. It's freeing. It's so peaceful. Oh, good. And now the last one is aspiration. And we've talked a little about this, and just it's you know, like the wider intention, right? Like you talked about the intention before going to sleep or before throwing out the water, and that's a momentary intention. And aspiration is really the way, just like the wider aspiration of our life, what I've been inviting us to think about in the mornings, or not to think about, but just to get in touch with. I find, as I said, very, very supportive in strengthening determination and going back the whole cycle. You know, what is your aspiration in this life for awakening? And don't say, I can't have it because I'm no good. Just think what's really important and renew it with yourself again and again. Really tuning into it. It strengthens all of it. So just to end, I just will only read from the Dalai Lama. I mean, you know, he told me that this is what he does every morning. I'm not saying this is his only aspiration, but it's an example and it inspires me. As soon as I wake up in the morning, I remind myself that nothing exists as it appears. This is the dependent arising, that nothing exists separately. As soon as I wake up in the morning, you know, I drag myself out of bed like, ugh, nothing exists as it appears. Then I think about all the sentient beings who want happiness but experience suffering. I generate compassion for them, determined to help them as much as I can to eliminate their negative emotions. So that's just an example, but every morning he does that. So that, yeah, I think that's all I want to say of those five qualities of determination and resolution. Like I'm going to remember the order, right? Determination or resolution, the power of familiarization, the power of positive seeds, cultivating the wholesome, the power of disenchantment, and the power of reflecting on and reaffirming your aspiration to yourself. All of these really do help to steady our practice and make all aspects of our life our practice. So that's what I wanted to share this afternoon. Thank you for listening. Thank you, internet, for not going out on me, on us. Unless